You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and that's what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. My name is David, and today I am joined by longtime WWE ring announcer Mike McGurk. We will chat about how she grew up in pro wrestling, her time working in the World Wrestling Federation, the craziness of the 1980s, being a woman in a man's business, and much more. Mike McGurk, welcome to OWW Radio.
Hey, hi everybody. David, you especially, how's everybody doing?
I'm doing real well. How was your Thanksgiving?
Wonderful, and I hope that everybody out there had a wonderful Thanksgiving in any way that they shared it, because if you just stop a moment and you give thanks, hey, you complimented the day.
Absolutely. Well, I wanted to thank you again for joining me here on OWW Radio. I'm a fellow ring announcer, so I'm looking forward to chatting about kind of the ins and outs of ring announcing. But first, tell me about growing up in the wrestling business. Your dad was Leroy McGurk. He ran a wrestling promotion in the Midwest in the 1980s. Where did you yourself grow up, though?
I grew up right there, but let's clarify. I think they kind of pick it up at the 1980s, but you got to go back even before I was born. And I love talking about my dad as much as that I know about it, even not even being around. But you hear the stories and what he's told you. But from the time that he had his accident, and David, I know that each time that I talk to a different interviewer or anybody, that there'll be something that'll spark, or I've run across something. And just recently I ran across these old articles. And, I mean, it just hits you because the article was from Johns Hopkins Hospital. And, of course, we didn't, you were verified by mail. I think that was everything moved by mail, not email or anything. But it was a letter verifying his blindness, that he is now permanently, and you just kind of think, okay, you read that and you look at the date and here up, it's kind of like when you're handed any kind of sentence that changes your life permanently. So I think I can start from the part that I knew of what a gracious champion that he was, and I hear that and read it, and then you have this. So his life started into promoting. It kind of fell into him with the fellow that started him, which was Sam Avey. And it was Tulsa, Oklahoma that I was born, and but I feel like I'm worldly everywhere else. It just, this was my base, and this is where I picked up, from how I grew. But his promotion started out even in, he had Memphis, I guess, and this was around the Gulas age. I mean, this was all so new. I guess the promoting and we still don't have television. So your live events and you're competing with. Really, he used to tell me. He said we used to compete with the Tent Crusade of Oral Roberts. he said at least we were in a building. They were in a tent. But I mean, what a growing frontier that it was. And then compared to back east, and then you had Vince Senior. You had somewhat like what you've got now. You didn't have the big promotions, but you had all your independents. You didn't have television. It was kind of a wild, wild west, but you had your New York and Los Angeles and St. Louis with Mushnick, and he would tell me about those, going on the road with them, and then, the territory still that he had left to make his name, but he still came back because this is where the belt was. So his promotion began to where he... he obviously knew the boys on the boys' side of it. And I think sometimes, some other people have said this, could have hurt him by being a promoter because he was not on the ruthless side, because he had the heart of what the wrestlers go through and family. That was mm-hmm. that was huge. And I grew up around the National Wrestling Alliance, which really, I mean, everybody belonged to it. I mean, when we would go to these meetings as a kid, you know, that was, oh, my God, we got to go to NWA. And I'm 3, 5, you know, I remember 5 years old, but it was fascinating to me because I was going to all these cities. And then all these promoters, you know, they all would be probably called Godfather-esque because, you know, they dressed nice. They were obviously people back then didn't work out. Wrestlers worked out and bodybuilders worked out. But the rest of us, we didn't have the gyms or anything like that that they do now. But, you know, I grew up with quite a starcade of characters. And the circus never impressed me like the wrestling business did. So, it's the way it was. I loved my animals, but he started that way, the promotion, and then growing up into it and being around families, I think a little bit. Stephanie was pretty young when we'd talk about this, but Shane and I would talk about what it was like growing up on the promotion side, because Vince obviously was not a wrestler, and he was involved in the television part of it. So they knew mostly of the grandfather, which I was privileged enough to. I loved Vince Sr. What a great guy. And that's the love I have for Vince. But to be around and to studied as a youngster to see Vince Sr. What a great guy. And all these other promoters. You had Don Owens out west and the Kaninskis and. You know, all of these promoters came to this meeting because that's what it really was. It was an alliance, and everybody was trying to better their business, and we shared in the champions. You know, Flair, Harley, that was a vote. You know, that was how each and everybody can use them and how they would get the champion, because obviously that's like Andre was kind of, what I would say was booked through the New York office, and so it was an alliance where everybody got along and everybody was wanting everybody to make business. You know, you didn't go out and try to squash the others. You respected the territories, and really the territories began, I believe, what I understood was with the television, is how you acquired the television and where you were willing to run, and so that. I grew up where we 7 days a week, most generally, there were 2 towns a night running somewhere, and we had the talent to do it. So you had the northern part of the territory, and then you had the southern, which meant the Louisiana part, or you had your Oklahoma, Arkansas, all of Arkansas, the southwest part of Missouri, and then we had the northeast part of Texas. So, you know, you were running a lot and a lot of money changing hands and promotions. I remember, you know, because again, I'm taking you all back to the 50s, the 60s, where you didn't have this electronic and the way that you marketed and you promoted what you had. I remember guys coming to the house and they had these absolute, signs on top of their beautiful Buicks, you know, and built, it was, you know, four-sided, and they were advertising wrestling, and Dad would pay somebody to go through town that day. It was a little town, not Tulsa, of course, but that's, I mean, you know, and then to watch it evolve into the television part, which, you know, it took you away from the person that didn't have to go and advertise like that. And now I see, like, people in the smaller towns, but if they're running for office, they're paying somebody to go through, you know, we didn't get this bad where you're carrying, you know, an 18 foot or 20 foot cattle trailer, but I see that and it's like vote for so-and-so, but you know, at least we weren't that bad, but it was amazing to watch it grow and then to graduate into what is now. I mean, we were on the opening cusp of it because, I mean, to sell out in Kansas City at Kemper Arena, 12,000-15,000 people. It was crazy to everybody. I mean, it was like, oh, my God. It's what Vince took it from what we regarded and protected. You couldn't help but love it, you know. And my dad got to go to a few of the events modern day to up to the before he passed away, because I was going on the road with him. But I couldn't imagine to be in his shoes, because here I'm in my shoes now and seeing how it's evolved. But he would say, because he had these aluminum risers, right? He, you know, my dad's blind, so he would hear him stomp, you know, because it's like they're ready for the show, right? And he's like, "What's that for?" And I go, "Dad, that's the people." And it, you know, he's like, "Well, I can say this. I hope on radio, I'll be damned." You know, because it was, you could imagine what was going on in his mind. He couldn't see it, he could hear it, and to feel that excitement, and I could by looking at it and thinking what he must be feeling because of how he worked so hard and drove on dirt roads, literally. I mean, we're talking going down to Beaumont, Texas, and or working for Houston, and he was a heel down in Houston. I would go down there early days, and he'd go, "You're Leroy McGurk's daughter," and of course it would be an elderly fellow. And he would mumble something really bad. He goes, "He was no good." I go, "Well, you know, he's rather liked in Oklahoma." So, you know, I knew of the feud between Oklahoma and Texas just by my dad. He was a good guy in Oklahoma, and you all Texans don't like him. He was born in Texas. But anyway, well, he was born in Garvin County, really in Oklahoma. But his dad's side was... very wealthy and was down on the Texas side, but as a kid he chose to grow up in Oklahoma, and that's what happened. So, but I would go to Mushnick used to tell me, Sam was used to tell me that about my dad, you know, and you should have seen him. And I've never run across any film. I would love to, if there's anything that was ever out there that was ever shot, which it would have probably been out in the days in Los Angeles. But I would have loved to seen him, his body of work, you know.
Sure.
I'd love to do that, because even as a blind man, I remember not only in my own home, but growing up, I would see him in the middle of the ring, and he'd work out with the guys, you know. And he was very quick, and he was just as quick at home. He never lost that. I mean, he could be standing, and you had better by damn watch what you say, and if you had said anything wrong, he could lunge at you at any given time. So he was rather quick.
You're normal. I mean, this was normal for you to grow up in this environment. That's kind of crazy, isn't it? Going from town to town, going to these meetings, meeting Andre the Giant and all these wrestlers.
Oh, yeah.
But, Mike, did you yourself ever feel pressure to get into the business?
No. I felt pressured by my own standard to stay in the business. So... that's why I married. And now I married for love, too, but I was gravitated towards the business. Mm-hmm. And to see younger talent come in that was of your own era and age, like the Ted DiBiase, and then you see the Brian Blairs. Because even Greg, I was a little bit younger than Greg Valentine when he came in. But I think that, you know, I was selling programs. I was part of the business just because that was what you did. That's, you know, you don't grow up asking. You grow up, I think that part of it was giving back. That was the way. That was a way of life. So if you don't know anything different, that's normal. I think that's what we kind of come out. I always say jokingly, it's like, what's the true definition of normal? I don't want to be it. So, no, because I wouldn't, whatever was normal for me was probably crazy for everybody else, and I'd try to draw people in, or because I went to a normal school. I went to, you know, started out in the Catholic school, not being Catholic, but I think what my dad wanted was a strict upbringing, because he was on the road a lot, and he started right, and then I think my mom kicked in, and then they moved out a little bit further away from the Catholic school, and he really wanted me to be in the normal. The more that I grew up, the more that he wanted me to kind of veer away, I didn't know, but from the wrestling business, only in education, because he always was, every day, I'm telling you, David, anybody that ever knew him, he was so grateful for what he had, but he was also very afraid of what he could lose. I think if you've had both eyes and you've lost one and then you lost another, and then you lose a wife, not my mama, but it was a previous marriage, and that was ended due to, I think she couldn't handle the blindness. I think it was happening before he knew, he knew it, but I think it was happening before he was blinded. And so I think he was always afraid of losing everything that he had. He always wondered if the wrestling business would last. How long could he hang on? I think that would probably be of anybody that, you've lost this and this, and you kind of get to the feeling of, I want to hang on to everything I've got. So he was very protective, but he never wanted me to count on the business. He had said that he was so lucky the way that it went for him, because his career literally could have been over, because he was a wrestling champion. Had he not gone to college, had he not had the literary background that he did, the journalism, my God, I read some of the from the sports editors of these letters of what a way he had with words, and he could. You know, if I was stuck on something and I was in school, and he would always, he'd love to sit at the typewriter. He typed all the bios, and that's funny because people later on when he was on television, they go, well, he's the color guy, and he's blind. And I said, because he had that gift. And Jim Ross would even just take lessons from my dad. Jim Ross came into the business through really my mom. My mom's grandmother and I think his grandmother were related, and he started doing spot shows for my dad. And first time I met Jim Ross, he was holding our wrestling in in Arkansas, a little bitty town in Arkansas called Fayetteville, and the ring was on sawdust, and the guys were Hey, he was promoting, and he was starting. But he came up and started working a little bit for my dad. But my dad got him a job with the radio station that we were affiliated with, KTFX. So he started there, made a pretty good name for himself, and got he used to commentate on high school games over in his home, and then graduated up here, and he just kind of had a flair for it, and he learned. He was a very quick learner, and listened to my dad, and then. Stay at the television stations. He wanted to learn, and then he had the gift of gab for God. We know that. He sold us, and a good guy, I still believe in his heart, and Jim had a great heart and a heart for the business. And some of the stories about my dad, I kind of, in his book, the first time that I saw him after the book came out, he looked up and he was like, oh, you here with your attorney? I should be, but no, because when Dad would go on the road and with Jim, and some of the stories on how my dad was in later years, he was a huge... Yeah, my dad loved to kid, and he was a huge rib. I mean... I know that they used to pick guys, hitchhikers, off the road when Dad had his eyesight, and I think they would scare the highly bejesus out of whoever got they wanted out of the car. I mean, I don't know what was happening. I'd hear some of the stories, and that was only because my dad would allow it. Some of the stuff I would just sneak into because it was great. Can you imagine growing up as an only child, and you had all these characters? I mean, literally. He made friends and held friends from the time that, he had been into the business. And then they became Vern, ended up in the promotion business. And, of course, Vern, the tournament was held here in Tulsa, and it was quite a tournament from what I understand. And then Vern got my dad's junior heavyweight belt. And he couldn't see it. I was reading that article, and he says, God, I'd give my left arm to be able to see that. And I bet he would have, What a tough thing. Within 10 months, you're letting go of your belt, and your whole life is changing. And But anyway, I would have, you know, he'd have like Argentina Zuma over. We'd have the Galentos over, and I had pizza before you could get pizza in a store because these wrestlers were cooking, you know, deep dish pizza, and that's what you did. The families, and you hung out with the families, and the, you know, they were out of character. But they were, you know, that's what I knew. And when I'd see them in the ring was kind of hard sometimes to discern growing up. But, you know, my dad never smartened me up, you know, ever.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, I was going to ask, because you did grow up in the business, did they let you behind the curtain in that regard?
God, no. Like I said, as far as I got was out there at selling the programs, and that was when I could count change, and the rest of it was you sat in the general admission, and or else when they were doing in the office, you know, remember, I didn't get to stay at home. We didn't stay at home alone. You went down to the office, and I hung out in the arena, okay? So the arena for me in Tulsa was called the Cimarron Ballroom. Well, when we weren't doing it as wrestling, a guy named Leon McAuliffe, which used to be with Bob Wills, and Leon had this. So I was drawn to the music business because I would sit there in total fascination to listen to these guys play. You know, okay. My parents worked. So also when we had wrestling, the band, it was on the stage, you would always see the equipment. So I was always, you know, I was always around, if it wasn't music, it was wrestling. And I was around show people. I was drawn, I loved, to this day, if we have a 10-day fair in Tulsa, I'm probably there 9 days. Because,
oh, my.
Not only did we have cattle, we had a ranch, and that was my normalcy. That was something I grew up with, you know. When we weren't in the office and we weren't talking wrestling, our getaway place, our go-to place, was the ranch. And it developed into being a 2860 ranch, 2,860 acres filled with registered Herefords, and horses that were there were geldings because they were to be workhorses. And I grew up having a little Shetland, and after that, I think my dad said, nah, because she doesn't need a Shetland, and I went in fully into quarter horses. So I loved that part of it, and that kept me normal. I think the schools that I was telling you earlier about, he put me in normal schools and public schools. And good schools. I went to Edison, but you know, I was surrounded by doctors and lawyers and dentist children. I was a freak, not totally, you know. But I mean, you know, the parents obviously talked, and they were like, "Oh yeah, you know." And then they would see my dad walking in the morning because with his leader dog. So a lot of them were like hush hush, or you were kind of protected, but then as you got older, by the time that I was around 11, 12, then they started going, the guys, you know, the only thing that I knew, David, was to beat the heck out of them or kick them because they were challenging me all the time. I didn't have a chance to be a girl. They were like, yeah, that's fake or whatever. They would try to, you know, do a wrestling move or something on me, and well, I'd go kick them. Well, my parents would get a phone call and say, would you please have your daughter quit beating up on my son? So I didn't have any boyfriends growing up. I think I couldn't have. I mean, it was already set. You know, your dad's in the wrestling business, and these big guys always hanging around. And it didn't also help that my dad always had an affiliation because he was part of the police force. During the war, he couldn't. He wanted to be a part of it, and they wouldn't take him because he had the one eye. So what he ended up doing was going on the police force, right? So he had that affiliation. So there was always people around with badges showing up, wondering where I was at, or your dad sent us out checking up on you. So that was another thing. You know, I had a lot of people, you know, if I had, and I never ran away. Why would I run away from this life? It was just that my dad didn't trust if I was, you know, he was always checking up on me. So I was always used to that kind of life, you know, somebody always looking and seeing what you were doing. So it didn't, you know, might as well do what you're going to do and come home and say this is what I did because you already know it. I've been followed. But he always was very protective of me and had so many, he had a lot of friends, a lot of outreach. He touched a lot of people's lives. And when I was growing up, too, we had, he had, he gave back, David. And I think that's one of the things that I learned about, that what he had, he gave back, and that was normal. You know, that was another normal, is to bring kids in that didn't have much. And we worked on Christmas. And why we worked at Christmas is they were Christmas shows. And so the poor kids, if their family was going to come to that show, he was giving out tickets if they had bought anything. So there was, usually everybody left there with something, the children. And he never forgot what it was like to be poor, because Daddy was poor. And I think that also goes back to what we were beginning in the conversation, is that he was always afraid of that, of losing, you know. So that, I think that's a huge drive. And, you know, I never knew about him ever being blind. You know, he never seemed blind to me, David. He, anybody that you would bring in, and the way that he conducted himself, he looked right at you. You would enter the room, and he knew you were there. It was crazy. But I think
that's
too.
Yeah,
very. But I think too that probably was because he never wanted to be a blind person. The only time that he ever read Braille was playing cards. And brother, he loved to play cards. And he had you know, he worked everybody on the table because he had the poker face. And you never knew what he's, you know. But, you know, growing up, he never seemed that way. When we'd go to Disneyland, someplace that he, when he was out in California, he loved California. And he rode on the rides with me.
Growing up in this environment, people knew you when you became a ring announcer. Did you ever want to step in the ring and be a wrestler?
Oh, that was, you know, it goes again back how you grow up. And I think that's probably what the McMahon kids did, because we didn't do that. Now, Shane, yeah, but the girls, you know, for me to even be in the business, David, and not have been a lady wrestler was just phenomenal for me to be in it. Again, like I said, I love Brian Blair. I have the most respect. We're friends, and we that's another thing. I don't have an enemy of anybody who I was married to, and especially if they were in the wrestling business. You know, that was something that you knew that you were going to have that affiliation, like having a child. You were going to always shake hands and bow gracefully. And that's how we've left it. And I'm going to be there also, too, before you've even asked me. I'm going to be there to support him and as he becomes president. I think that's awesome, awesome, awesome. He deserves it. He's great. Everybody deserves it, but I think he can take the reins and handle it really well.
Right, just so people know, you're talking about Brian Blair. He is going to be the president of the Cauliflower Alley Club. Well, actually, he is now the president,
sure,
as Nick Boxall stepped down recently. Right. So yeah, and I know Brian pretty well, serving on the board of directors with him at the CAC, and just a real solid guy.
Oh, yeah. And again, it was almost, and we laugh about this because we know that, because he was asking more about me to my mom, and I didn't have time for it. It was like, nah, you know. Well, he invited me to Tampa, and that was it. So my thought was, hey, we're going to live in Tampa. Oh, no, that's not going to happen. And he knew we needed to be here. But the problem at the time, and he knows that, he was on the younger side of it. We weren't nearly to be compared to Stephanie or Triple H at all, because the people will say, well, Stephanie was able to do it. Well, there's a little difference from us trying to take it over and splitting a territory, because at that time, the territory's intact. Brian and I get married. Within 6 months, things really changed here with the Bill Watts situation, and you know, he literally fired my parents and gave them a notice. They left the office that day, and a messenger came to their door. Brian was there. I mean, you know, you're 22, 24, and this kind of thing happens, and you think you have your whole life pretty well set, and I'm marrying the promoter's daughter, but I don't ever think that he looked at it. It was a nice bonus. But
sure.
He did, you know, we did love each other, but I mean, everything changed. And then the demands of oh, my God, we're, you know, he still was wanting to develop as a wrestler. It was going to be really tough to be, in that seat as pushing the pencil and being a booker. He wasn't ready for it, and he knew it. So it was really hard. So that kind of, you know, hurt the marriage a lot, but it never hurt our friendship, ever. And that I value. The same way with anybody that knows me, and they're kind of tiptoe around the subject, and I go, if you know, no way. You can ask Brian, and we're the same way with each other, mutual respect, and that's the way it is. And I couldn't be happier. But you know, to go back, we were both young, and it was a tough time. And he ended up. My dad felt that at the time, you know, you need a rest. You can't just be here in the territories, because that's what you did. Yeah, that was how he learned. You have to go somewhere else. So we went to Kansas City for a while. After Kansas City, we decided we were going to get married. We went married, and then he called Ed Francis and said, "Hey, this kid's marrying my daughter, and okay, you got a spot for him." Well, we went over there for 4 weeks, and that's how it worked. And you know, for our honeymoon, and then we met, oh, my God, from Whipper Watson to it, just all the talent that was working there, and they were having a change. Francis was stepping down, and Maya Villa was there. You know, I have just so many. I got to meet the other side of it, and being a wrestler's wife was a totally different hat to wear, you know. They don't have, I learned at that time, they don't have much to say. Well, I had plenty to say. I wasn't going to be the good little wife that sat there and shut up. I knew too much. And that was another thing. You know, I was born with a lot of Irish in me, and and I was, I was a feminist before they knew feminists. And I that was also, too, why my dad said early on, "I don't want you to be a lady wrestler." The fans would come up and say, you know, "Oh, I bet you got a future wrestler here." And you could see his eyebrow raise above, because he wore sunglasses, and he'd be like, no. And he'd, boy, you know, I'm sure I'm all for it. I'd make, God, my God, these lady wrestlers were gorgeous. I'm on Facebook with Ann Casey, and then Judy, I know, has had some, I love Judy Martin, and Grable's had some problems, and Candy Devine is still stay in touch with, and I have so much respect for them. But remember, my first lady wrestler was Moolah.
Sure.
How can you top that? You can't. You know, but all these girls were trained with Moolah, so they were Moolah-esque, and they were trained by her. They had standards. They were beautiful, gorgeous, and they worked. You know, they worked like men. And they cared about their matches. So obviously my dad didn't. And they were hurting. My God, Ted's mom, you know, Helen Hill worked for my dad. And I have beautiful photos. I've got, I think Ted's asked for that, and I should. I think he's got some. But I've got some of him and his dad. You know, his dad was junior heavyweight champion here. I knew Ted when he was 5 years old. He used to tear up my stuffed animals. He was a mean little boy. He was horrible. They was, you know, they'd come over to the house, and Dad's, you know, my mom would say, "Those DiBiase boys, and that young one, that Teddy." You know, but remember, you got Mike, that's, you know, there with my dad, and Helen that worked for my dad, and the, you know, the kids were playing around. That's, we grew up that way. So that probably set the stage for me and Ted right there. Is that, you know, I'm going to get even with you. You tore up my animals, and another one. I mean, these guys, we grew up when we were young, and he'd been around the business. So you have the second generation, the Von Erichs. You know, there is an unspoken love that you have. I don't even have to see Kevin, and you know, I via through other people. You know, it's like, I love her and I love him, and that's how we feel. I grew up with them. You know, when we couldn't, obviously we weren't attending the meetings, but we were out there with our, in Vegas. Well, it was party time for us kids. We couldn't be in the casinos, but by God, we room serviced. And I mean, the Von Erichs and I, we would have, oh my God, cases come up and sign, you know, Fritz, Leroy, and
right.
We had a time, but those are, you know. So you, how do you explain that when you, there's an unspoken love with those people? You always will. You know, you always will be because it is. We're not better than anybody at all, but we've seen a few, you know, the stories. And it just is. You don't have to see them. It's just like Ted. We try to make – I was at a show, and his schedule didn't meet my schedule. And then his person came over to me and said, "Oh my God, he's just he missed you." They ran him out. They ran him out of the office. But he had forethought enough to send somebody over, and that he sent his regards. And that was, you know, that just that's pretty cool. That's something that you know. It's like I'm so proud of Sam Houston, Mike. I've known him since he was a kid, running around and hanging with Grizz, you know, and he's turning his life around, and great kid, you know, a good kid. Some where all of us could have, you know, because we were around, you know, and I, the Von Erichs, there you go, Carrie. Just being around Carrie, and nobody, you can't work on yourself. You can't fix yourself if you don't know you have a problem.
Sure,
I think
sure.
He knew at the very last that he had a problem, but, you know, he'd come to me and he'd go, "Mike, I can't go down. I can't, you know, I'm Carrie Von Erich." And I said, "No, Carrie, you're Carrie Atkison." That's the point, again, that I make that I think saved me from oh, my God, I'm not in the wrestling business, or, "Oh, my God, what's going to happen to me?" And I go to drugs. No, that's not because I was grounded enough to know that I could, and my dad told me this many times, "I can rub you out with an eraser." And I saw that happen. You know, I mean, really, in this business, you can be. You can be on top one day and out the next. It's just how the business was. If you weren't making money and if you didn't do right, so that's why I think I lasted with Vince as long as I knew the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Sherry and I tried to bend him a few, but, you know, hey. It's Sherry. I could be on another phone call. Just the friendships and the relationships that I made has allowed me to even that you're even talking to me, and it's pretty cool because I have a lot to say, and I think there's still a lot of people that want to know what's it like, what was it like to grow up, and you know, and you wanted to be a woman wrestler. No, that was squashed at the very beginning. I saw them take the bumps and the bruises, and also like talking to Ted's mom that wasn't working in it anymore, or just like meeting Moolah and knowing her. I had nothing but respect for these girls because I would see them up there to me up there on the stage. You know, that was a stage for me, and see them because remember I'm believing everything. But you know what? You have to. They whatever the angle was, that still was their body. That's not fake. Any way you want to look at it. So they could tell me all that they wanted. They were really pulling her hair, and I didn't like anybody pulling my hair. Remember, I'm kicking the boys walking home from school because they're challenging me.
Right.
So I didn't want to do that. I wasn't trying to do that, but I also I didn't really think I had a place in this business. So obviously then we married, and that wasn't working out. So there was this calling that I had, and the avenue just made its time. The times made its time. The 80s started changing. They started coming out with the music, you know, the Rock and Roll Express. There was a change. There was a bend. Now, I saw it in 76 when I first laid eyes on DiBiase. I was like, oh, yeah. Then you had the kids coming out of Amarillo and being Ted, and then the Guerreros. Well, I've got a picture up from in my hall right now, and it's Gory Guerrero, surrounded by my dad. And I'm like 5 years old, and here's mm-hmm. all these guys in the suits. And I mean, it's just, it's mind-blowing. You never leave the business. Your heart never leaves the business. I never could get tired of talking about it. Even at how it's gone now, it's still the same. It's still the same. Any way you change it and put a spin on it, you still have a wrestling ring. You still have the athletes out there. And it grows as in anything. It's like in the music business, how that used to be, and you know, it's in any business how it develops. So yeah, if you loved it once, you love it always. And now being like the diva, you know, I bring that up. That was never a word for us. this is something that's true, that it was almost like when we'd ask Jack Lanza or anything, is like, you know, we need a dressing room, and it was like, what? You what? Well, Sherry and I would like to have a place. And he was like, well, there's a broom closet over there, and that's the joke, because, you know, too many times, don't make any waves. If you can find a place, find it and get it done. You know you got to be ready. Showtime. Done. So, you know, it was, that's why I took it, is from the time that I could supply a ring. And that's how it all turned. Vince Sr. died. Junior had this on his mind. Vince said it all along. He knew what he was going to do. I didn't know when. And then it just worked out, the television, the times. And when Sr. died, so did the part of, well, that was my dad. He wanted to take care of all the alliances, but this is a new day and new time, and Turner Network was coming on strong, 1980, and man, you know, satellite was coming on. So your local was, all of a sudden, why do I have to go out, load the kids up, and go to the local show? Of course, we fed off the weekly show and then want to make them come to the house show. Why do I have to do that? Well, on Monday nights, I can watch Madison Square, and then I've got Turner coming in, and your house shows was falling. So you saw a different business, and your old standard of wrestling was changing, and it was becoming colorful. And more what I understood, putting rock music with these guys, heck yeah, I'm for it. That's great. And then now the visual part of it, and it, because it should be a production, and I love that part of it. That the way it, and to be on the cusp of that, to where the people that I went to school with, that were, when WWF would come in, WWE, but WWF would come in town, and here's these people that I went to school with, right? And they're like, because I always went by Kathleen McGirt, because again, my name is Michael Kathleen McGirt. I hated being Mike growing up as a girl with your dad being a wrestling promoter, okay? I'm trying to be a girl here, people. It didn't work. So anyway, I would get the note, and they'd say, there's somebody asking for Kathleen McGirt. And I'm like, oh, I know who that is. So they would ask to meet Hulk, or they'd be like, oh, my God. And I, let me tell you, I gave them about a 2 to 5 minute lecture. Like, weren't you the na-na-na-na-na? I remember when you gave me so much crap in school, and you want to meet Hulk? Yeah, okay. Oh, man. But it was kind of fun. It was fun. And, two, there I took a kind of hiatus from the wrestling business, about 2 years, which a lot of people don't know, but the Oak Ridge Boys do. And I was a limo driver, and I worked in the publicity department for Jim Halsey Company here in Tulsa. And I think that was a part where my dad kind of, and Watts and them were doing great business, and I was trying to find my own. Like I said, I didn't think I could ever have any kind of foothold in the business without being a wrestler, and that wasn't going to happen. You know, no way. So I did that, and then I still am friends with the Oak Ridge Boys, and I got to be around a great talent, Don Williams, and every time, Joe Bonsdall is part of the Oak Ridge Boys, and he was out of the North Carolina. Well, that's Crockett's, right? So we would be talking, and he would go, oh, man, you know about Ric Flair and all this, and man, and I'd just go, Ric Flair, of course, this was, you know, 78, 77, and he was just kind of coming on and the scene, but he was being talked about. So, and it was probably 86, 87, I was doing a show, I had the ring for Vince, and we were in Nashville, and I was told, put your ring on the track. It's on a dirt track, but obviously it can't slant. We had Andre on the card. Dr. D was on the card. I had big guys, and we were doing the main event was where they're all going to be in there, and it's like, oh, my God. And I've got to have these people shim my ring up. This thing can't, because you can't. You can't. You can't have the ropes break. You know, these guys are working. And anyway, Oak Ridge Boys, Dwayne Allen came up, and we were in the infield, and it was before the show started, and he's like, Mike, oh, my God, my limo driver, because it's been about 7, 8 years go by. And he's like, I got my teenagers here, and he goes, they're dying to meet Hulk Hogan. I was like, I can do it. I can make that happen. So it was really been fun because every anything that I've done, whether I've ventured out somewhere else, is my roots are here in something that you're calling me for. It's wrestling, and you'd be surprised.
Yeah, I want to ask you, Mike, of course, the most famous WWF ring announcer of all time, Howard Finkel. What was your relationship like with Howard? Did he give you, some guidance and some help as you got adjusted to WWF?
No, my God. Look at it. Here's somebody that Vince is bringing in. Oh, my God. And this guy is very good. Howard is very, very good. But, I went to college and I was trained and I loved my broadcasting. But this is now their territory in my books. This is their game. He's been here. I'm the new kid. I didn't want to try to make any kind of moves. I just wanted to be, I just wanted to be a part of it and to have that chance. I'd been doing it on the road for 5 years. I started doing the ring. I was going to kind of get into that. I'm hopping different stories. When Senior died, Junior took over, and within about a year, I got a call from a guy that used to promote in North Carolina. It was George Scott. Well, George Scott had worked for us for a little while, and George said, hey, he was great. He was friends with everybody in the business, and another prince of a guy. Never wrestled, but he knew business, and he'd been affiliated with Ringling Brothers, too. He was a great marketing guy. And he said, hey, I've talked to Terry Garvin. And he said, he's up there, and he's back east. And he said, Vince is getting ready to open up, and he's going to run everywhere. Really? Well, Bill is still, Bill is now doing my dad's territory. Well, I'm not in contract with Bill. My parents were in a no-compete. I wasn't. And I just happened to save one wrestling ring out of there and put it up there at the ranch. And I thought, really? And he said, do you all have any rings left? And I said, by God, I got one. It's out there in the back 40, but it can still come alive. And he said, well, you might give him a call. Well, it wasn't. 2 hours later, Terry called my parents, and he said, you all got a ring? You got somebody to run it? And that's when my mom said, you want something to do with this? I'm on it. I'm like a rat on a Cheeto. You bet. I've got this. And just tell me where and when I need to be. Because understanding the business like we do, coming from that, you don't have a show if you don't have a ring. That's mm-hmm. the beginning of it. And just tell me where. And my first show was in Oklahoma City. And that's how I started. And I can be in a whole other interview of how I started. And the announcing eventually came because they didn't like the radio guys that were coming in and doing it because it was all about them. And where I came from, again, was from the aspect of what I thought the fans would want to hear. They don't want to hear a big, boisterous, whether it's female, male, or whatever. Hey, it's all about me. Yeah, they don't want that. Be respectful. Give what you've got to say. Enhance the show, don't take away from it. So obviously with all those things in mind that I had been doing, that was kind of wiped away when I was listening the first night that I came up on board in Connecticut with Vince, was forget about whatever you've been doing out there in the live shows. Now we're on television. I think that got me more than anything because to listen to Howard made really not too much sense to me because I hadn't been listening to WWF Network or I don't even know that really, I was able to get it. If I had, I'd maybe listen to Howard a little bit. But remember, I'm the female part of it, and I've got to be just as much all the way to the tuxedo at the very beginning. If you see any old stuff, you'll see, I think there's one old promo photo that's going out that where I'm with Rick Rude in the ring, and that was during the days of the men tuxedo because I didn't have anything to go by, and that's what I was doing. It was like I am the woman in the man's tuxedo trying to do what that man can do, only with the kind of a blonde hairstyle kind of female. I didn't want to veer off to any kind of direction where it was all about me. It was to do the job as efficiently as I could. More or less, when Howard would look at me, he almost kind of got it. He was like, I just want to be the Howard with the blonde wig on. And he was like, Mike, that's enough. But I wanted to do everything that I wanted him to like me, because I wanted to be a part of it. So you want to follow in his footsteps, and you want to have his dialect and his you want to follow as closely as you can and get everybody's approval. Sure, I wanted Vince's, but I also had a lot of channels that I wanted to. I didn't want to rock waves. I wanted to be a part of it, and that it worked, and it did. And finally, then a little bit of it became where I could, you know, obviously he wasn't going to wear spandex pants, didn't want him to, but I became where I was being where they would let me do a little bit more with the Mike McGurk character, or, right. You know, I was thought, well, and it was me. I was like, well, God, I'm doing 3 weeks of television. So for the next 3 weeks, they're going to be looking the same stupid red jacket. So could I change? Well, they were allowing me that, but just a little bit. You know, be careful about too much change, because it would draw attention to yourself. I didn't want to draw attention to myself. If everything was going fine, because I used to go to Vince, and I'd say, hey, Vince, after the show, is everything okay? And he'd just be, mm-hmm. And finally, it was like, hey, because it would be Vince and Pat, you know, because that was my approval. And I've been looking for approval since day one. When my dad named me Mike, I was like, is this okay? Anyway, and he'd go, Mike, when I call you in, you're going to know something's wrong. Otherwise, don't worry about it. And that was the truth. He let me go. And it was a wonderful relationship. It was you know, you almost like you were a child, kind of, you know. It's like, okay, you get away with so much, and then you get that look, you know. And okay. But, you know, he had me for so long isolated, and it was not a bad thing. He was trying to protect me, Vince was. I had to travel by myself. I rented the car by myself. I stayed by myself. I usually was classified as with the office staff, but yet, remember, I'm still doing house shows. So sure. I would step from television crew to back to my love of just doing house shows, because, you know, if something flubbed up and you know, Jake came in with a snake that was sick and it threw up all over the canvas, you know, you could stop and go and, you know, look down and laugh, and the people are like, what's going on? And here comes the ring crew. You know, the ring crew's there. They clean it up, and Jake's sitting there dying laughing. And you know, he's like, I guess I got a sick snake. And, you know, that's the house show. Things like that happen, and you know what it's like to work in a house show compared to...
Yeah.
If you're working in a television setting, it's you know, things like that can't happen, and everything's already taken care of, we've house shows, and anything can happen. The music didn't play, and you're standing there, and everybody else is standing there, and you've got to ad lib pretty good. You know, you've got to have and make it to where, you know, excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, we're having technical difficulties. We will now go in. You know, it's just like, whoa, where that would come from, it's just training. And I think so much of it was Hal Finkel and watching him. He was so smooth, so great, and a good guy. I liked Howard very much, but and he says no now, but I said, you don't realize. It was a long time before I think that he didn't know how to take me, and I think that in anything, that, you know, the new girl, I think that was kind of, oh, when Bonnie Blackstone came in, but of course she came in and she went right back out, but you kind of wonder, all right, if you're here to take my job, or, you know, sometimes you can get a little insecure, I think where I was always coming from, as long as I did my job and I did right, and that I got along with everybody, why not? This is so big. Why not just be part of the wheel? Don't make it to where, oh, you've got to come to me for it to work. BS. We're all in a part of this, and what makes it run smoothly is that we're all in this together. And that was the beauty of it, because we were at the beginning of it. The big money was coming, and we were all so happy, and we couldn't believe the big crowds, and that it was catching on and growing. I mean, you know,
sure.
It's like Kurt. You know, Kurt, again, is that generation, and we would be just like, oh, my God, you know. But you also are being thrown the rock star life. And everything happened so much, so fast. And I think that's probably why a lot of things happened the way that they did. And, you know, it would be nothing, and I've told this, it would be nothing for doctors to be handing out stuff just to be your friend or be your,
yeah.
I mean, it was there. It's not there now, I'm sure. It was not there as I was, I mean, the last half. It was at the beginning where it was like, what's going on? And Vince didn't, how could he? That was where one of the reasons how I got hired. I had been working on the road, but he never saw me. And just by chance, it was sold out in Wichita, Kansas, and Hulk was there. It was a huge card. And I thought, you know, how else does he see this? You don't have iPhones. You don't have any of this. But I happened to hire a guy, looked up in the phone book that afternoon. Obviously, I'm still holding and carrying the ring, so you're there that day. You know, you've got the ring up, and the rest of the day you're looking around or eating or getting rest or whatever. Well, I called and got this video guy, and he happened to be one of the guys that developed the Skycam, the old Skycam. Anyway, I said, can you videotape this? The show is sold out, and I said, I want to send it to my boss.
Mm-hmm.
And it, mainly because I wanted him to see what I was doing. And he could it would pan and see what the crowd is. Because he doesn't. He only gets a phone call and says, hey, we made this much money. Yeah, the show went this way. The match went this way, blah, blah, blah. But to visually see it. And I sent him that tape. We did about a 15-minute synopsis of every match on the card. Me and they were announcing, getting out the show, the beginning of the show, and right before the 1-2-3. The guy was great. Because I said, when you see the finish coming, you know, and I said, if you can get right there on the three, if you can get right there on there, and he did. Well, the tape went to Vince, and I was hired. So I think he never forgot that. He was like, you know, that's pretty ingenious. And I said, well, it was just, I kind of was thinking, you know, you never get to see, and they can tell you, you know, because I'd always be, I want more dates.
Mm-hmm.
And never realizing television, never, ever. This was Vince's deal, totally. And but he liked my idea, and he also liked the fact of when we spoke and met that. He literally, this is the true story. After we talked and we met, and what he had an idea for me to do, because he said that you can announce till whenever. He said, I like that. But he said, I'm starting a television studio. And that's really what he wanted me to be a part of. Bruce Pritchard was a part of it. And he wanted me to go into that part, which we did try to do some of the color, and I did that on Houston TV for a while. And so he was trying me all around, but I was supposed to move there. This was 1988 that I went on, and so it was a big year. It was the year that I lost my dad, but that summer, this is how good Vince was. I was working there Monday through Friday, but he knew I had two small children, and he would fly me home every weekend to be with my kids, and mm-hmm. then I would be back. This went on for all summer long in 88 as we were getting developing the studio. But my dad was getting more ill, and he literally, I was off on the road when this happened and when we lost him, and, of course, first thing I wanted to do is I wanted to get back on the road, and Vince was like, no. And I said, please, this is where I need to be, is with the wrestling. That's where I'm closest to him. And he said, you've got kids and you've got your mom there. And he said, he gave me a month off. Of course, I was afraid, like anybody, if you're off a month, he'll forget you, and there's, you know, 100 people that can take your place, but you don't want him to realize that. And if he realizes that, you might not get called back. But he was good to his word, to a fault, and I came back, and it was wonderful. And the whole thing of that whole summer was we were to find a place, and he wanted me to move up there. And I said, really, everybody? Because I was meaning leaving the ranch and bringing my mom, my dad, my kids. And he said, I want you to load up the truck, and you're moving to Stanford. Well, we had found a house, and it was pretty close to that. But, again, when I was ready to sign the lease, this all happened. I thought, like, this is the end. But Vince was so good, he was like, no. But that was the end of my television production part of it, because he said, you know what? be with your family. I'm going to use you for TV, and we're going to be doing, you still continue with The Ring. And that only lasted about 2 years because the popularity grew, and the more that I became the television announcer, and then it was Wrestling Challenge, he took me off the Ring, and I was like, no! No, you can't do that, because it meant money, you know? It was money, sure. No! And he goes, no, I can't have my ring announcer. Of course, there you come along as how the business was progressing, because now he couldn't let that be shown that, you know, you were doing this. And so I could feel the progression of how the business was moving, and I can't be, you know, no, you can't be coming to the ring. And you know, the credibility. He was beginning, the images were beginning to happen, so, and yeah. The characters. And so I quit the ring with that and then became just nothing but television. But I started that way from the literally all the way around to the ground up, serving as the ring, and then doing the music. And then literally one night on my mom's birthday, September 12th, 1986, in Memphis, Tennessee, that, and again, Moolah, all these people I'd grown up with. Andre was on the card, and I'm going to be announcing this because Jack came up there, Lanza came up, and he's like, that guy's over. He's done. The guy was he was probably about 10 minutes up there on the, it was all about the radio station. Hey, yeah, bing, dang, wow. And oh, my God. And I here goes Jack with his clipboard, and he's steaming. Because you can't get up there, and he's like, I could see him, because remember, I'm still just, you know, I'm just at the bell and running back and getting the you know, what's going on and trying to give to the announcer. And he called me, he got that guy out of the ring, and he looked at me and he's like, back here. And I was like, oh, my God. And he came up there and he said, you're going to do the card. And so I'm writing down everybody's name, like I don't know them, but I'm scared to death that it's, you know, and their weight. Moolah comes over there and she's like, what are these for, kid? And sits there and takes her card and just throws it. She goes, you know who I am. You'll be fine. You'll be fine. I was scared to death. I've got them out there. I got my dad, really, you know, and he didn't know what was going on at the time. You know, they were kind of explaining to him. You know, we didn't know he had Alzheimer's until he had it. And it was like January, and he was gone in September. This is such a new disease, David. So what we were thinking was like, he had some cloudy spots. But anyway, it was just, I said, Dad, they're going to have me announce. And he's like, you? You know, remember, this is, you know, your dad. He's like, you? That's unheard of. What's a woman doing announcing? You know, I don't care if it's your daughter or not. He was that tough. There was no favors. That was another thing. I think normalcy came in is that if there was anything that went down in my younger years that was wrong, I took the blame of it. Because either I was never to be there at that time, or you shouldn't have been associated with them. Doesn't matter if it was their fault. You were with them. You're going down. So okay, I did it. So anyway, I've hopped around so much in the interview, but it's just been so much fun of a life. But when you ask me about Howard. Everything that I knew and I thought I knew, I didn't know anything until I had met Howard Finkel. And to this day, and I'm sorry because it's like, oh, my God, I wish everybody else, but I need to make a personal phone call and ask him how he's doing because we used to chat, and it was nice chats. And I think in the very end, I can only hope that I was his friend. Another one was getting the respect out of Mean Gene. Love listening to Gene. Oh, my God. I was just, you know, not everybody gets to be born into it. I was born into it, but I was a fan first, okay? Mm-hmm. And I still am. I was a fan of all these personalities. I'm a fan of, my music. And even though I understand, because I kind of, like my mom would say, how I was towards Elvis, I love Bob Seger. You know, that's how those wrestling people are towards the talent. And I was like, what? Well, they're, you know, they're not Elvis. They're not Bob Seger. They're not this. But that is the same way. That's how they looked at it. And for people to want to talk to me, to be associated with it, I can't do anything except give them and thank you and try to give them. Now, there's people that will try to write to me and want me to sign pictures. And I'm kind of at a dilemma about that because I'm worried about if these promoters win and if that they have me out, that, well, if I'm giving away my autograph at home,
right, right.
What's the point? So I want fans out there to know, if anybody's listening, that I do occasionally get this request, and if they'll understand that I'm kind of protecting not only myself, but I'm also protecting the promoters, that I'd like to be able to go out on the road and see my old buddies, ha ha ha, hint, 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 and be able to do these autograph sessions. And if I do these personal autographs through the mail, that's going to kind of knock that out. So
sure,
anyway,
sure.
You'll understand that.
Well, Mike, we got to get going here in about a minute or two. One last question for you. You were travel buddies with Sherry Martel. At the time, though, there were not a lot of women in prominent roles in WWF. Of course, Miss Elizabeth was the one, at the side of Randy Savage and had a big spot in the company. Were you and Liz friends? How were you two in the locker room?
There was three of us. Well, let me tell you how I met Liz. Probably around the 86 area, because I had the ring down at the Superdome, and my kids are on the road with me. No, I'm sorry, Max wasn't. He was too young, but my daughter was with me. And, well, uh-huh. And it's in the middle of the afternoon, and Randy and Liz always got to the building early. They serious, that's, again, another second generation. Business comes first, and you get there early. And so I've got the ring up. My guys have got the ring up, and I'm looking for my daughter. And I go in the dressing room, and she's down there going through the hallway going, Hulk Hogan, Hulk Hogan, where are you, Hulk Hogan? And somebody with this beautiful, sweet, said, honey, come in here. Come on in here. Well, honey, it's Elizabeth. Well, to me, I've only seen her out on the side of the ring, and Randy's very, very protective of her, so I haven't got to talk to her yet. She's in there with my daughter, pulling her in there, and I'm like, there's this beautiful lady, just as gorgeous as they come, and just as human and sweet. I loved Elizabeth. Elizabeth, and I was the mediator between, I was mediator and in the middle between Elizabeth, and I was a little bit Elizabeth, and I was a little bit Sherry, but I was Mike, so I was in the middle, I just loved the three of us together, and we got along. I never knew anything but not, because I don't know. I just loved him. And there'd be times that Liz would tell me about Randy, and she goes, oh, there's secrets, certain secrets, because they're both dead, but certain secrets about the jealousy, or I would be jealous of her. I said, well, you've got somebody carrying your bags, Liz. And she goes, yeah, but I'm stuck in here. And she goes, Mike, I would love to have your position. Isn't that wild? Because she would be wanting to be the independent part of me, and I'm like, no, I want somebody to take care of me like you. I want the pretty dresses. This is tough out here with these guys. You don't know. And getting in and out of the ring, and you don't, it's tough. Because I said, you have you are grandfathered in, so to speak, because of Randy. I'm out here just, you're Leo McGurk's daughter. So what? So what? Prove yourself. And it was tough. But no, the relationship I had with those women, I think that was a lot of this, David, that I want to tell everybody out there, that they are gone, and I know that out of the three of us, there's only me to talk about it, and for a long time I couldn't and wouldn't, and now I have to, of what beautiful people they were, and how I still stayed friends with Liz, or would try to get a talk to Liz, even when it was WCW and she was in there with Lex. We had a friendship. Mm-hmm. And I would see Liz when I wouldn't see Sherry. And we never got that meeting together. We swore together that we were going to be Golden Girls and be down living in Florida, and we didn't get to do that. I hope I can live the dream one day, because I'm headed towards Florida. One of these days I'm going to get there. I'm going to get there and know what it's like to have 365 days of warm weather and sunshine, somewhat.
But, amen.
Here in Oklahoma, we've always had the tornadoes, but now it's like daily, I guess all this fracking that they're doing out in the West. But we have earthquakes here, so it's like, okay, if, once we have a hurricane, I'm good. But I've had it, I've had it, the winters and stuff, and I'd love to leave Oklahoma. Eventually will. But the relationship was wonderful. And Sherry not only was a relationship in the ring, but also she would come home and she'd stay with me for a couple of days and take care of my, I used to have a lot of animals, I had potbelly pig and llamas and, of course, always cattle and horses, and Sherry loved that. Sherry was a huge animal lover, a huge, soft-hearted person I've ever met to do with the things that she did. The most giving person I've ever been around. I miss her dearly. I miss both of them, but Sherry's one that I could be somewhere, and she would literally, I mean, she would pick me up and slam me if she could. She did hit me one time in the face by accident and just killed her. And she also did my hair a lot of times. A lot of times. If you see my hair all messed up, that's courtesy of Ms. Martell. Because she could, you know?
It's been so wonderful having you on OWW Radio today. Before we let you go, please let your fans know where they can find you on social media.
Okay. I guess the people still do on Facebook, but I'm on there as Mike McGurk. Twitter, I am on The Mike McGurk, and also Lady Announcer. They're kind of combined in there, but I think I'm on Instagram, and I think I'm on Mike McGurk, but if you'll kind of get me through Twitter or Facebook, I can lead you the rest of the way. And also, too, I wanted to give, I will be at the CAC. I'm looking so forward to that. And also, I'm also affiliated with a group that I just did some announcing for them just on the main events. Good group to work for, NWA, Texoma. Robert Langdon is the promoter down there. He's trying to do some good things. Teddy Hart was down there on the card with me. He didn't wrestle, but he's trying to do some good things. And he does that in Sherman, and Sherman, Texas, a little bit of Texas and some Oklahoma towns, but he does do a lot of old style and old school wrestling mixed with new, and he's just got a new way of thinking, and he's trained out of the California wrestling, but he has old school mindset and does really good things, and he's got a new champion out there, Tim Storm. Which is, you got to look him up. But they've got some good talent, and I've kind of, every now and then, we'll do some work with him, and it's a good promotion. So I always want to plug it, and the things that he's trying to do is good for the
very
business.
Good.
Thanks so much, and I hope you learned something about just go out there, develop your own style, and be honest. And when you're announcing, just be honest. Because you know what?
Wonderful.
You can't fool the fans.
Well, wonderful story today. I feel like there's a whole other radio show we could do together. I'd love to have you back on sometime.
Okay.
And thank you so much. Have a great rest of the day, and thank you for being on the program.
Thank you. Have a great rest of the day, and I love it. And for everybody out there, if you're still taping, I don't know, but have wonderful holidays, peace in your heart, and be good to one another. Bye.
Don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. Email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Until next time, I am David. Thanks again to Mike McGurk for today's entertaining interview. Hope you enjoyed the show. Have a wonderful holiday season, and we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.
All right, well, that's the way.